Hello there, and thanks for joining me on the podcast today. The psychology of politics. That's the issue today. We're taking the topic of psychology and putting it into the context of the political world today and some of the issues that are pending before all of us. You know, we're living in a day when the world is now topsy-turvy. Things that used to be held with great honor and reverence and respect are now being trampled upon. Institutions, positions of authority, styles of government, styles of leadership are all being questioned and denigrated in a miraculous way these days. So let's take a look at some of the issues, and I invite you into the conversation, actually. What I'd like to do today is take about four, five, six issues and just say, look, just think about them and join in on the conversation. Add your two cents. Discuss it with somebody. Tell somebody what I said. And then tell them what you think, and you add to the conversation, and begin the process of becoming part of the conversation. Because I do think this, that as the years unfold ahead of us, we all, whether we're passive or aggressive or assertive, whether we're timid or not, we're going to need to speak up. We're going to need to defend ourselves. We're going to need to defend points of view. We're going to need to defend institutions. We're going to need to defend our lifestyle. We're going to have to advocate as well as defend. We're probably coming to a world where passivity is probably not to be encouraged. So hence, I'd like to have you start a conversation. And I'll give you some ideas and some thoughts and some topics to just get you thinking and get you started in the conversation. I don't know if you've said anything at all yet about this defunding the police departments across the country. I don't know if you've taken a position on that. I don't know if you have any opinion on that yet. But you know, I do. I'm just now finishing a book entitled Heroes in Blue. And in that book, I have a section on the topic of defunding the police departments across the country, what that means. Now, I'm not in favor of defunding the police. That's the position I've taken. I'm not in favor of that. Now, there is room, however, for the police departments to reorganize and to restructure and to rethink how to police a particular community and how to police a state or a governmental agency or a piece of property or whatever it might be. There are ways to do it differently than the ways that we've done in the past. And when we have used authority and used power and strength and fear tactics, we may now need to use a different set of strategies based on interpersonal relations and based upon reasoning and coming together. So maybe we need a different type of police officer. Maybe we need a different structure of how police departments are run. Maybe we're going to need a different system by which there are police officers devoted to criminal activity in a community. But then there are police officers devoted to social issues in a community, such as homelessness and abuse in the home of families and children and so on. So maybe we do need to have an authoritative police department, and then a non-authoritative police department. So there are ways that a community can restructure and rethink the issue of policing a community. But defunding it is not the answer. Defunding it is just kind of turning it over to the wind and turning it over to hope and turning it over to just the powers of the people themselves. People cannot govern themselves. We know that. People will destroy each other. People will overpower each other. People will take attack on each other, and so on. We don't want that. We do need a police presence. And the black community, the more impoverished communities, need police protection and police presence more than ever, and more than anybody else. We may need a whole system of private duty police officers to support the public duty police officers. In the same way that we have schools, we have public schools, we have private schools. They both do the same thing. Now, we know that one does it better than the other, but it's the idea that we may need to have systems in place and treat every community differently. Every community is going to have its own system, its own way of keeping order. Okay, that's one point. I'd be interested in your thinking on that. Now, take my points and then just kind of elaborate as you discuss it in your home and discuss it with your friends and discuss it at work this week before us. Okay? Now here's another topic. Black Lives Matter. Now, that's a misleading phrase, and it's a misleading identity, and it's a misleading organization. Unfortunately, it comes with the blessing of the White House. Remember, it was President Obama who invited the supreme leader of the Black Lives Matter into the White House and gave him his blessing and gave him encouragement to proceed with the plans of the Black Lives Matter movement. So it comes with the blessings of the government, the Democratic government. Now, Black Lives Matter is really misleading. For me personally, I was not raised with that concept, with that thought in mind. That's very foreign to me, and it's very objectionable to me. You see, I was raised in a church as a child that sang a song that went something like this: red and yellow, black and white, all are precious in His sight. Jesus loves all the children of the world. And then he would repeat that and repeat that and repeat that and repeat that, and that became like a mantra. And I still remember that, and it still is a very important piece of music and a message in my mind and in my head regarding the black-white matter within our world and our communities. But the other thing about the Black Lives Matter, as you know, first of all, they're anti-cop. They do not respect the police department. They do not want to work with or honor or support and encourage police activity. They're against it. They are against family life. They are against family life as we know it, as we structure it. Mom and dad and kids in a home, the family is not to be encouraged. And now many of the Black Lives Matter people probably come from homes that do not have mom and dad within the home. They probably have an absent father, more than you would think. But besides that, the Black Lives Matter is anti-Christian. It's anti-church. It's anti-religion. So you see, when you look at the Black Lives Matter movement, can you really work with them? Can you really understand them? And can you really support them? And can you really encourage them? And can you really back them up in any kind of way? When you know what they're really about and the message that they're trying to infiltrate into our thinking and into our society and into our culture. No. I prefer the little song, Black and Yellow. Red and yellow, black and white. Black and yellow, red or white. Doesn't matter. Because they're all precious. Okay? All precious. So let's live our life that way. Let's let that encompass our thinking. Okay? Now let me go down to another topic. Gun control. See, gun control is it's an important issue. But guns are a natural resource. In the same way that oil is a natural resource. In the same way that gas, electricity, our natural resources, you see, there are, and minerals, and that's what guns are all about. Guns are a natural resource, and we need to honor, we need to respect, we need to take care of our natural resources, including guns. We can't eliminate oil, we can't eliminate gas, we can't eliminate any of that. Natural mineral within our ground and within our earth, but we can manage it well. We can make sure that it's there for the future. Make sure that it's well used and well controlled and not overused and not taken advantage of, you see? That's how you got to understand guns. When you understand guns as a natural resource, you then respect guns, and then you will honor and you'll reserve how you utilize guns in your life and encourage it within your society and within your culture and within your community. So guns are part of a natural resource. See it that way. It's a different way of looking at it. And then we won't be taking our guns away. We won't be restricting the use of guns. We'll just manage it better in the same way that we manage oil and all the other natural resources well within our country. Okay? Now, let me go to another topic. What are our kids going to do come this fall when school presumably will be open? Now, maybe it will be. Maybe it won't be. We don't know that. But what about the future of your kids' schooling? I've given some thought to that, and let me just kind of put this into perspective, okay? Now, kids have been in Zoom school all year. Now, parents, you know how well your kids have done school this year. Some have done it quite well. Can utilize the Zoom system and advanced and made progress and acquired a good bit of learning this year. And parents, you know that some of your kids have not done that at all or done it very poorly. So what do we do now come this fall when let's assume that school is going to start up? Kids go back to school, just pick up the next grade and go on as if nothing ever happened? No. Parents, it comes now down to you to make a decision. Don't leave this up to the school. This is not a school decision, not a principal decision. It's not a teacher decision. This is a parent decision that you have to make. What do you do with your kid in the fall when school starts up again, if that is the case? Well, let me give you some guidelines, okay? Let me give you some of my thinking on that. If you have a boy, consider holding him back, doing the whole grade all over again. If you have a girl, probably she's capable of moving forward. The brains of boys and girls are different, especially in the first 6 years, or first six grades of schooling. So, boys, yeah, you may want to hold them back. Here's the second point. If your kid's been struggling this year in schooling with the Zoom, hold them back. If your kid has flourished with the Zoom, let him move forward. Use the idea of how well he has utilized the resource of Zoom as a decision basis for what you're going to do when school starts up again in the fall. Then let me ask you this one. If you come from a community that has options, seriously consider the options. You have a community private schools. You have options of homeschooling. You have the options of a voucher system. You have a voucher, or you have the option of a private school of one kind or another, charter schools of one kind or another. When you have options, consider those options before just deciding to go back to the public school. The public school might be the place for you to go, but it may not be. It may not be in your child's best interest to go back to the public school. Consider all the options. Now, the research shows this, that a community that has a lot of options relative to school choice, the kids do better in that community. The competitiveness of the school systems and the school options encourage better learning. Look at the options that are there before you and utilize them and choose an option. Now, maybe public school is your best option, but I would look at all other options first and consider that and make sure that you choose rightly, you know, for your child. So those are some of the guidelines that you may want to think about as you think about school, you know, going forward. It's not an easy decision, but dad and mom, it's your decision, you know, to make. Those are some of the issues that we need to give thought to. Let me just add one additional one. What about the idea of identification, to buy something, to utilize something? You know, we have this voter ID issue pending across the country. Now, ID, voter ID, is for the purpose of voting. That's a behavior pattern. Voting is a behavior pattern. We have an identification when it comes to alcohol. That's to buy alcohol. That's a different issue. We should have an identification matter when it's not for buying alcohol, but it's for drinking alcohol. You should have a license to drink in the same way you have a license to drive. You don't have to have a license to buy a car. You don't have to have a license to buy alcohol. But you should have a license to drink in the same way you should have a license to drive. And the same thing when it comes to voting. Is you don't have a license to be 18 or 16 or whatever age. You have a license to vote. The behavior of voting is what the license is for. The identification is for. Think of having a license to do something rather than just to be something or to have something. Now, I think it's the same way when it comes to fathers outside of the home. We know that children do not do well in homes where there's an absent father. We know that there is a high likelihood, like a 70% chance, of children from a fatherless home going to prison. We know that there's a 68% chance of them dropping out of school and doing poorly in school. We know there's about a 65% chance of them becoming pregnant as a teenager and having social problems and attempting suicide or committing suicide. Very high levels of possibility when there's an absent father in the home. Rather than to pay a black man to be poor, like they're doing in Oakland, why don't we pay that man to move back home and become a father to his kid and give him a pay per day that he's back in the home and he's spending time with his kids. Maybe the kids will do better. Maybe Dad will do better. Maybe all of us will do better, and we'll function better as society. We have the accent on the wrong basis. We pay people for being poor. And, of course, they're going to continue to be poor. They're going to do everything they can to become poor. No, stop that. Pay people to do something. And in this case, pay the father to go back home and be a father to his kids that he should be and should have been all along. Okay, there you are. Those are some of the thoughts. It's up to you now. Take them and think them through. Tell somebody what I've said, and then you add your thoughts to it. And have a conversation in your home. Have a conversation at work. Have a conversation with the people that you deal with every day. But start talking on these kind of issues. And we'll do some more the next time. Thanks for joining me on the Psychology Report. And our topic today was, of course, the psychology of politics. Bye for now.